Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rights Radio Power Hour, your independent voice. And I'm Dr. Joyce Starr, and this program is brought to you by RightsRadio.com and by StarPublications.com. We're covering important topics today. Should we leave Afghanistan? The administration's plan to review prosecution of CIA operatives and the John Adams Project, revealing the identity of people who work for the CIA. My guest is global terrorism expert Dr. Neil Livingstone. Neil is a commentator on terrorism, intelligence, and national security issues. He's a veteran of more than 1,300 television appearances, including Nightline, Meet the Press, Fox News, and O'Reilly, and all the major networks. He's the author of 9 books on terrorism, security, and foreign policy. He's also chairman and CEO of Executive Action, and that's executiveaction.com. Welcome back, Neil. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Joyce.
Let's begin with Afghanistan. As you know, George Will wrote an article yesterday. Are we in danger of losing the war on terrorism?
Well, we're certainly not winning the war on terrorism right now as it relates to Afghanistan. We've done a very good job of dealing with al-Qaeda thus far. We've forced them out of power in Afghanistan, or forced their protectors out of power, the Taliban regime there. We've driven them to the ends of the earth, in many cases underground. We know that al-Qaeda is still a viable organization, but the fact is they haven't been able to carry out a major attack in the United States since 2001, and they haven't carried out a major attack against our allies in Western Europe for several years. So on that front, we're doing all right. On the front of trying to pacify Afghanistan and create a viable regime in that country to administer the country with some justice and fairness, and to basically address the Taliban sanctuaries that are there, we're not doing so well, and we're losing an increasing number of Americans in that war, which is going to escalate without any question in the months ahead.
Is this our Vietnam?
Well, there are a lot of parallels to Vietnam, and sometimes it's too easy to make those parallels, but there are some disturbing similarities. One of those is that President Karzai appears to have stolen the recent election. Maybe he would have won anyway, but certainly there's significant evidence that he stuffed the ballot boxes. People arrived at their polling places to find, for example, 550 ballots already in the box at the time that the polling place opened. So we've got a corrupt and not very efficient regime in place in Afghanistan, which has probably just stolen an election, which doesn't have much power outside the major cities, and seems to be propped up by American and coalition forces. That's very similar to the Tu regime in South Vietnam. We also have a very entrenched opponent in this regard that no matter how hard we hit them and how often, seems to come back at us again and again. So there's a parallel to that in Vietnam in terms of North Vietnam and the Viet Cong. There's some dissimilarities, though, that augur in our favor. It's a country that has suffered from decades of war right now, but there is support among many of the people of the country to end the war. They want a better life for themselves and their children. They seem to take the view right now, a pox on all of them, including the Karzai regime, the Taliban, and the United States, for that matter. And so while we're not losing the war in an overt way, we're not winning it either. So it's pretty much of a stalemate right now.
What are we doing? because it doesn't make sense. I think increasingly so, even people who consider themselves, as I do, an independent conservative or a conservative independent, and yet I find myself oddly siding with people who say maybe we should consider leaving, and now you have George Will, the ultimate conservative, saying we should get out. So can you put that in perspective for us?
Well, George believes that given the fact that we don't see the end in sight, that it's going to cost many more American lives and a great deal more money, and he's saying, to what purpose are we going to do this? On the other hand, there is a very strong national security interest by the United States in ensuring that we don't have another regime like the Taliban regime that was in power on 9/11/2001, which had provided sanctuary to al-Qaeda and to Osama bin Laden, and in effect allowed them a free hand to carry out terrorist attacks around the world. So we don't want a pirate state in Afghanistan at the same time. So, but we need a viable government.
What are we going to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the dilemma right now. President Obama has made the commitment to have a surge, if you will, in Afghanistan. He has turned his back essentially on Iraq and saying that that was perhaps the wrong war. We don't have an interest in staying there very much longer. But in Afghanistan, we do have an interest in ensuring that this area doesn't collapse into complete chaos at some point in the months and years ahead. So I think the United States has to decide right now whether we have a government, one, worth supporting in Afghanistan. If we don't, we ought to try to get that right by using, if you will, our muscle to either get a new election or to toss Karzai out. The alternative being Abdullah Abdullah, who is, I think, a vastly more capable and less corrupt individual, but only time will tell. Secondly, we need to see if we can make some headway in dealing with the Taliban sanctuaries, particularly in Pakistan, because if we, if the Pakistani government moves effectively against those sanctuaries that are just across the border, that will make it very difficult for the Taliban in Afghanistan to survive without its external lines of support and communication. So a lot of this is going to depend on, one, our role in Pakistan, two, whether we really have a government that we can support in Afghanistan and should support. And if we don't have those things, then we may have to reconsider and say, look, we can pull out and simply, attack any regime there would become a safe haven again for terrorism, and make it very clear to any successor regime in Afghanistan that we will take whatever steps we need to, and particularly in an air campaign or things like that, bomb them into the Stone Age. I don't know what the answer is, but it is to say, we have to make it very clear to any regime in the future that we will not tolerate that state being a pirate haven, if you will, as it was in 2001 when it permitted its territory to be used for a major attack on the United States.
How long does all of this take? Because, for example, with Pakistan, the new administration came in with the claim that they were going to convince the Pakistani government to take those kinds of steps, but have they done so at all?
Well, the Pakistani government has moved against the Taliban in the Swat Valley, which is to the north of Islamabad. The Taliban got within 60 miles of the capital of Pakistan, and President Zardari moved very effectively and has thrown his army at them. One of my concerns, of course, is that when President Zardari was in the United States and had a private meeting with President Obama, President Obama only spent 10 minutes with him. He spent 30 minutes with the Chicago White Sox. And arguably, Pakistan is one of the four or five most important relationships that the United States has in the world today. And President Obama gave short shrift to its president. We've got to really back that regime, and I think President Zardari is a good man. I think he's much underestimated. He's a good friend of the United States, and I think we need to give him the means and the wherewithal to go after the Taliban and do so effectively. That was the problem. We gave Musharraf, his predecessor, who ran a military regime there, we gave him billions of dollars of U.S. aid, and it really didn't accomplish very much. And he was unable to destroy either the Taliban or to bring those al-Qaeda sanctuaries up in the northwest frontier area under control.
But isn't that one 10-minute meeting worth a thousand words? Doesn't that convey something that will go long and far beyond the meeting itself?
Well, I would have thought the president would want to spend a lot of time getting to know this man, because if he's going to be a critical ally of the United States, I think you want to have a personal relationship. I think you want to make sure that everyone's on the same page, if you will. I think you want to give whatever personal assurances you need to give. You know, the president has, I think, got some misplaced priorities in this regard. Certainly, if he can find time to meet with Hollywood celebrities and sports teams and people that one would have to say, however important they might be, are less important than, say, critical relationships with some of our foremost allies. The president needs to take leadership in this regard and get out front. I know he's got the health care debate right now, but he really has not made this issue his own yet. He's not explained to the American people what we're doing in Afghanistan now. Why a surge? Why should we be backing Pakistan? He cannot look the American public in the eye and say, look, I know the president of Pakistan. He's a good man, and we're going to back him to get the job done, and we'll give him a reasonable amount of time to do that. Similarly, he needs to say, we will not tolerate a corrupt and ineffective government in Afghanistan, and for there to be continued U.S. support there, we either have to get a fair election and an effective government, or we may have to consider pulling out or certainly vastly reducing our commitment to that country.
Do you feel that George Will's column is creating a turning point here?
Well, I think this is very significant. Yeah, this is very significant because most conservatives have to this moment been pretty much supporters of the U.S. military role in Afghanistan. This was the one that both Democrats and Republicans seemed to be fairly united on. While there was great debate over Iraq, Afghanistan was the place that they said, well, you know, we really need to be there. This is where we had the Taliban government. It was a horrible government. It, wouldn't educate women. It blew up, Buddhist statues simply because they were from another faith that were archaeological marvels. It was a government that punished any man for not wearing a beard. Banned music. It banned, virtually everything. It was a 8th-century regime, if you will, and the world threw up its hands in horror when they really saw what was going on there. So I think right now the fact that Will has come out and put the choices that the American public faces here very starkly before them, and saying this may not all be worth doing, and if it is going to be worth doing, we better have assurances in certain areas that we're backing the right regime at the right time, and that we're going to have the cooperation that we need to really successfully pursue a war there.
And I think the American people are becoming very queasy with the death of each new soldier, the loss of a soldier. It's very sad and very tragic for the families, and people are feeling it.
Well, every life that we lose of a young American serviceman, our servicewoman. I was at Arlington Cemetery this morning for a funeral, and you know, it takes 2 months to get in line there, not only because we're losing a lot of World War II veterans right now, but also the death count is steady and has been rising, in particular in Afghanistan. And we lost 4 people in Iraq yesterday, which was significant because we hadn't lost that many people for some time on a single day in Iraq. So the United States is bearing this burden. Our European allies are generally nowhere to be seen, even in Afghanistan. Those that are there are generally, other than our British friends, in non-combat roles, are basically showing up with a half dozen people. And so it's really not a, we call it a coalition war, but it's really an American war right now with the help of our British allies. And I think that's another challenge that President Obama has, is that if we can't convince any of our allies to support us or increase their commitment, you know, we have to take that into consideration as well. And particularly in terms of our commitment to some of those countries, if they won't back us here, if we decide that it's very important they do so, we either have to second-guess ourselves and say, why won't they back us here? Or we better use whatever influence and leverage we have to try to get a greater coalition commitment.
I don't see that coming, and I have a feeling you don't either, because the British people are also asking some tough questions, and I think they want to see their country withdraw from Afghanistan.
Well, I think that in Great Britain, I was there last week, the issue is that no one seems to see the end in sight. No one seems to see what the plan is here. And I think that the Karzai government has outworn its welcome with its latest election shenanigans, both in the United States and in throughout Europe. People are saying, is this really a government worth supporting? Should we be expending our national treasure and the blood of our young men and women to prop up this government, which can do so little for itself?
Now, before we, I'd love to continue on this, but I don't want the show to end without moving into our second and third question and hear it, and that was the administration's plan to review prosecution of CIA operatives and the John Adams Project. Let's address them together.
Well, this is a very unfortunate thing. Morale at the CIA is at rock bottom right now, and it's been that way a number of times in recent years because Congress, which rarely criticizes itself or looks with any introspection on some of its own actions, is very quick to condemn public servants that have gone out and in many cases put their lives on the line to defend this country. This particular case is one of what was acceptable in terms of interrogation of terrorist suspects, particularly some of the masterminds of Al-Qaeda. And we've got all of these people in the United States and Amnesty International and various European countries crying these huge crocodile tears for people who were responsible for the deaths of more than 3,000 Americans on 9/11. President Obama seemed to have gotten it right to begin with when he said, well, we don't want to look back, we want to move forward. And the Attorney General, Mr. Holder, has indicated that he has named a special prosecutor in this case to look at the issue of the interrogation procedures and tactics, presumably with potential criminal charges against people that whatever lapses they may judge occurred. And when the president was asked about this, he's too cute by half. He says, well, that's my attorney general. That's not me. I'm looking to the future, not the past. Well, it's his attorney general. If he wanted to stop it, he can stop it any time he wants, simply by picking up the phone and calling the attorney general and saying, we don't want to do this. but he's really abrogated his leadership role to very radical elements in the Congress, the Nancy Pelosi's of this world and so on, who represent very left-wing districts and who have been crying for some type of blood from the CIA and those that were involved in protecting this country in the months and years after 9/11. It's a very unfortunate thing. I can see no good coming of it, and I think it's going to be incredibly divisive.
I spoke to somebody in Washington who said, well, this happens all the time. People are always criticizing the CIA. People I know in the CIA are going about their business and doing their work. I can't imagine that that's really true. If I were in the CIA, I'd say, hey, where do I find my next job? I can see the writing on the wall. What's the feedback that you're receiving?
Well, I heard the other day that young CIA officers that are joining the agency are being told, you better have the name of a good lawyer just in the back of your mind in case you ever need it right now. And that's because we're, again, second-guessing so many things after sending these people into harm's way. Then we suddenly go back and say, well, we're not sure that you did it right or what have you. In the past, those were administrative issues, and we recently had this deplorable situation in which we had major news stories talking about the fact that I believe it was 2004, a CIA interrogator put a gun to the head of an accused terrorist. Now, he didn't pull the trigger, and it was something he shouldn't have done, but the system at that time took care of it. The interrogator was disciplined, and unfortunately, he ultimately left the employ of the agency. But it was over and done with. It was, I can't imagine, you know, that most people in the media haven't screwed up once or twice. And those things were handled administratively by their employers. In this case, there was no harm done. It was dealt with because we had the right systems in place. Similarly, when an accused terrorist was shown a power drill, thus to try to frighten them, that was also dealt with administratively. And if those are the two worst incidents that we had in 2004 and 2005, I think the interrogation system was working pretty well. One other thing I'd point out, I was an interrogator many years ago, and at that time we had many allies, particularly in Latin America and so on, that were abusing human rights, and they were hooking people up to field telephones and shocking them, giving them electric shocks and so on. And we actually taught them waterboarding as a reasonable form of interrogation. We taught them sensory deprivation, bombarding them with noise, by contrast, or keeping the lights on, things of that nature, making the cell too hot or too cold. Those were considered acceptable ways of putting duress on people so that you could get information from them. Now we've changed. We now say that waterboarding is not acceptable, even though we know that it was the repeated waterboarding of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind, for heaven's sake, of 9/11, the guy directly responsible for killing 3,000 Americans, to putting this country at war, changing our whole society, in effect. The mastermind, we got exceptionally valuable intelligence. There's no debate about that at all right now, from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and that was done through waterboarding, which had been blessed, if you will, by the most senior levels of the United States government, reviewed thoroughly, and found to be acceptable.
It shows that he was fairly weak as well, doesn't it? Because after all, waterboarding is not life and death. It's very uncomfortable and a miserable experience, I imagine. But the man really rattled after that. Ratted on all of his friends and colleagues.
Well, I think it was that, look, the guy figures he's never going to be free again. And he's going to be, you know, in a just world, he's going to be hung or shot or something. Mm-hmm. So I think he probably at one point said, I really don't need this aggravation every day. You know, it isn't that it's ripping flesh from him or his fingernails or something like that, but it is an extremely uncomfortable experience. And I'm sure he at some point said, I've held out a reasonable amount of time, and I just really, you know, I know that what my end is going to be. No one's going to find me innocent and let me walk someday. But in the meantime, I want a little dignity. I want, there's no reason why I shouldn't cooperate and try to ensure that I have a little more comfort until they decide what they're going to do with me.
So it's a huge gain for something that, while perhaps not, I don't know if it's questionable, depends on your perspective, but the fact is what we're talking about now is turning those operatives into victims themselves.
Yeah, what we're doing today is we've got the ACLU, and we've got the liberal left in this country every day trying to sucker and support, in effect, the people responsible for 9/11, the people that brought this country to war, the people that killed so many of our fellow citizens in an unprovoked surprise attack. And I don't think that it lessens this country, as many have said, to use forms of duress, not torture, but duress, in order to gain valuable information. And the day may come that the whole future of this country rests on getting information from someone when there is a chemical or a biological or perhaps even radiological or nuclear weapon secreted in one of our cities. And are we going to basically say, you know, gee, we really can't hurt this guy's feelings, because if we do, we'll get in trouble, and instead we'll sacrifice millions of our citizens? That day will come one day.
I think it might. And what about the John Adams Project, where they're showing pictures of these same folks to the terrorists themselves?
Well, it's a dreadful, dreadful situation when the ACLU, which I, you know, think in the past has done some good things and was once fairly even-handed, but now seems to be in the hate America crowd, if you will, that they've gone out to take photos of former CIA alleged interrogators and alleged CIA officers to show them to the accused terrorists at Guantanamo and elsewhere, so that they can bring presumably either criminal or civil charges against those people who are only trying to do their job to protect America, to serve their country, to protect the rights that the ACLU so wantonly tramples on. The ACLU is not out there protecting the United States, in my judgment. These people were. And it is inexcusable and reprehensible, the behavior that they've demonstrated in exposing, in some cases, the identities of covert CIA officials. This is, after all, one of the big scandals of the Bush administration, was when Vice President Dick Cheney's then chief of staff supposedly gave the name of an undercover CIA officer to a member of the media. And now the ACLU is doing the same thing, except 10 times worse.
And what happens to those officers? They effectively are barred from performing their work and their task.
They could, and they personal harm could come to them or their family. They could be. They're trying to. The ACLU is trying to criminalize their actions, which were, directed from above and were blessed by the highest authority in this country. I mean, I think what we ought to do is, if we have a problem that over the type of interrogation techniques and so on that we had at the time, that I think that was dealt with at the ballot box. People said that they dealt with the Bush administration. We have a new administration now.
I want to thank you. It was absolutely a phenomenal show. Thank you for being with us today.